I've been gone for a little while. What have we been up to in the last 2 weeks?
What is a body without organs?
It's an egg. Next question.
The book is interesting. That's kind of my takeaway.
Sure. What did we... Sorry. Like, we didn't meet 2 weeks ago, and then we did meet last week. What did we talk about?
Yeah, we talked about the last two sections of the first chapter.
So we talked about 5 and 6. Got it. Cool.
I need to get the book.
Yeah, the machines.
Yeah,
and then the whole.
We talked about the machines. No.
Okay. The whole in its parts, I really liked this section a lot. I feel like I got a much better developed understanding of what they're doing from rereading this section.
Yeah, and then we were reading the reader's guide, the first chapter of that over the past week.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody read anything other than the assigned reading from that reading guide? I read the context section as well, and I found that to be really helpful. What's it called? The first Deleuze and Guattari in context, or Guattari. I found that section to be very helpful. Just talking about how they met and why they were writing this, and about May 68 a lot, and sort of making it very concrete what they were trying to address with this. Let me see if I made any notes.
Yeah, I hope to go back and read the rest of this. I actually didn't finish the section, the assigned chapter. Got busy this week, but I do find Buchanan's writing style to be pretty clear without actually seeming like they're dumbing down the text too much, which is nice. Also, he mentions, and I guess this has been mentioned multiple times, but it didn't dawn on me until reading this reader's guide that it's not that anti-Oedipus is it's purposefully supposed to be delusional. The text is written in a way that's really purposefully dense. So kind of understanding it as a I don't know, hard thing to read and not just I don't have all the concepts was helpful for me. So,
yeah. I also found the Buchanan's reader's guide super helpful. Although while I was reading it, I was sort of constantly aware that at least Deleuze would have hated it because it's not it's not this process that he talks about of taking an author from behind and producing something that's theirs but monstrous. He gets into the different syntheses of capitalism and sort of explains everything really clearly and sort of lays things out in a way that's super helpful for me to understand the text, but it's not it sort of feels like it slows down that schizophrenic process that they're trying to go through. And maybe, risks instituting some sort of representational model back over the text. But it's also nice to just have somebody write clearly and explain, this is what they're talking about and this is what's going on with this text.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that that form of writing, while I get it, I get the same feeling when I read Derrida or something like that. It's kind of a two-edged sword, right? It's really cool because you can derive a lot of meaning from it just by thinking about it yourself and just come up with a lot of different stuff. But on the other hand, it can also just get so outlandish, I guess, at some point that it just that it gets out and absurdities almost. I think that's kind of kind of like, let's put both like good and bad, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, both can be helpful. So then, what is the body without organs?
Yeah.
I think I found for this, in addition to the Buchanan's guide, the PillPod episodes where they read, like Zizek has a book critiquing this book called Organs Without Bodies because he's a Hegelian, and so that's what you do, I guess, when you're a Hegelian, is you just like reverse everything, and then that's critique, that's how it works. But anyway,
hell yeah.
What's that?
Oh, I said hell yeah.
people love it when you change the order of the words around. Anyway, yeah, so they were talking about the body without organs as like potentiality, as like the thing that is produced alongside desiring production, that is like not, that doesn't totalize it, but is like this sort of like if you're thinking about a chicken and an egg, and like a chicken being an egg's way of making another egg, like you could think of the body without organs as that like life potential or productive potential that's trying to get back to a abstract place of pure potentiality where it could go in any direction. And you can think of money as the body without organs of capitalism because it is productive forces trying to get back to a purely abstract position of potentiality where it could go in any direction. And they made it super, Buchanan like makes this super clear, I think, in he talks about Marx's sort of formulation of money, MC M prime, meaning like money is converted into a commodity or some like concrete form of production, and then later back into money as capital. And I'll just read this quote. Marx's general formula of capital, MCM prime, can therefore be interpreted as depicting not just the logic of individual capitalist investments, but also a recurrent pattern of historical capitalism as a world system. Central aspect of this pattern is the alternation of epochs of material expansion, MC phases of capital accumulation, with phases of financial rebirth and expansion, CM prime. So basically, this is the process of deterritorialization. Is what's being described here. And that was super helpful for me to like, and I think there's a lot of stuff that they sort of impregnate this concept of the body without organs with that's not just capital. And that's part of what makes it so confusing is they seem to like, well, they'll define it and then they'll go back and like add something to it or like contramand something that they said earlier. And I don't know, it's confusing. But that's the understanding I have of it at this moment.
Yeah, in the reader's guide, Buchanan mentions like the this example says that the body without organs is a site of primary repression, and then he gives this example like the short film and how like pornography codes certain things as belonging to the domain of the sexual, and goes on to say that it's like the element of anti-production, which is the body without organs that selecting what can and cannot be shown, which gives it to me more of like a concrete, like repressive force, which is like not very intuitive from the way, from like the phrase, the body without organs. But I thought it was an interesting example. don't really know if it's like practical to come up with a definition and rather just like come up with examples and metaphors for it. Or,
right. Right. As long and it's closer related to this idea of like the virtual that Deleuze touches on in other works that I haven't read but intend to, but like and Buchanan talks a little bit about this later, but about the problem of time and how you can be a good materialist, right? And like be this sort of, all right, well, we're not going to have some sort of transcendental representation or God or object or logos or whatever you want that is the site of where like new ideas or something comes from, but we do need some sort of concept where we can talk about difference and where difference comes from and how any sort of like connection can be established by events in time so that we can talk about something like a self. And so I feel like I don't really understand this concept of the virtual very well right now, but I think that's going to be really key for me to like get at this this idea of the body without organs and this idea of like a how it's not like some kind of just like transcendent superstructure, but something that's produced alongside desiring production as a component of it.
Oh, is there a difference between a superstructure and a hypo object?
I may just not be using the right word there. What's a hyper object?
Oh, that's that's from the book by what's his name, Timothy Morton, the guy that said some very not nice things about Mark Fisher after he died. Anyway, but he. Like global warming, for example, like these like massive like objects, like phenomena that are so big that we can't materialize like the event or the objects in our head, I guess, like in our like when we think about it.
So would deep time
like the
be
so
an
so
example
like,
of a hyper object?
Yeah. So like deep time, the entire universe, global warming, stuff like that.
Interesting.
It was just if you knew like both like concepts, but if you don't, it's like fine. So it wasn't to correct you.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that concept in particular. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah,
it's nice to have a way to talk about things like that. So a big part of the chapter that we read from Buchanan is talking about the three syntheses, the connective, disjunctive, and conjunctive syntheses. And I think it's kind of interesting that he spends so much time like pulling this out and talking about it, because on my sort of like naive first reading of this book, I saw these terms and I was confused by them, but I didn't think that they were as important to what they were talking about as Buchanan seems to. And I just think that's interesting. I think it explains a lot, like, having read this. Like, it certainly helps me to sort of clarify a lot of the things that are going on in this text. But I never would have guessed that they were as important as Buchanan sort of gives them credit. So it's kind of weird how they've written this book, because they seem to... I don't know. The number of times they mention a concept doesn't seem to correlate directly with how important that concept was for them.
Yeah, it's a great thing about philosophical texts, right? Is you can just have somebody drop a term in like a paragraph, and then that spawns 50 years of discourse from that one like phrase. Like, I think there's some similar things in, like, what is it, like, yeah, I don't know. I had the exact same reaction also to these syntheses. Like, I saw the terms and was just like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm not going to understand that.
Yeah.
And then now it comes up here. I didn't get to that part in the Reader's Guide yet, though, so I can't really comment further.
So let me, does anybody want to make a attempt at summarizing what the three syntheses are?
No, not really. I dropped the book because of these three previously, so I don't really have any idea what's going on here.
All right, I'll take a stab at it. This is gonna be rough. Okay, so the connective synthesis is, he talks mostly about like what I was talking about before, about Marx's theory of like, you know, and money commodity, money prime, this process of becoming abstract or flexible. They talk about the abstract machine. They'll like mention this in the text a couple of times, and I think that's what they're talking about. What they're essentially talking about there is the body without organs that is able to take a the process that takes a collection of what can be considered from the perspective of desiring production to be an organ, right? Something that produces a flow and can arrange those organs into a process, into an organism, but only in order to get back to a place of abstraction at which the organs can be again like reorganized and reappropriated. So that would be the connective synthesis. And then the conjunctive synthesis, oh sorry, yeah, that was the synthesis of connection. I'll actually read this quote here because this is what I highlighted for this. This is what Deleuze and Guattari mean when they say that the desiring machines try to make us into organisms. The synthesis of connection snaps our organs together in new arrangements of its own making and its own design. On this view of things, organs are any parts of the body which can be seen from the perspective of the unconscious or capable of performing labor, capable, in other words, of producing a flow themselves, but also of turning the ceaseless flow of libido into an affect, i.e. a cathexis in Freudian terms. That is to say, both an interruption and a conversion of desire. These parts, the organs, are the equivalent of free labor inasmuch as their productivity is henceforth in the service of another party, namely capital itself. This labor is productive in Marx's sense because it advances the objective of capital itself by producing surplus value. This is why Deleuze and Guattari say that producing is always something grafted onto the object, namely the organs. The essential point here is that primitive accumulation gives rise to something greater than itself, not merely capital, but the capitalist class itself, henceforth the new rulers of the earth. So there's a lot that he's mixing here, and I don't necessarily always like that that Buchanan does this, because I feel like he might like over... I don't know. Maybe he over-analogizes between capital and and desire, and I feel like they do a pretty good job in this book of not over applying those metaphors. But yeah, basically the idea is that there is no original unity of the organism that can be made reference to. The body without organs simply creates like a temporary organism or organization, which it can use to get back to a sort of like abstract production. And that would be the connective synthesis. And then the conjunctive, sorry, go ahead. Oh, I thought somebody started talking. Never mind. Oh, right. And the disjunctive synthesis would be they have this quote that from Anti-Oedipus that stuck with me that talks about how like capitalism makes it appear as if the productive forces are a cause of capital itself rather than, you know, the true cause being a person's labor. So like this idea of how labor embodied in a commodity presents itself as something alien to the worker later on. So that would be the disjunctive synthesis, the way that the body without organs is able to make the result of production appear to be something that is alien, that is alienated. I think there's more that they say here, but that's basically what I understood it to be. This idea that you're able to produce a self that's alienated out of this imminent process of production. And then the conjunctive synthesis is the sort of what do they call it? The residuum, the like surplus value, the surplus enjoyment that falls to the self as a consequence of this process of production. And I might be conflating disjunction and conjunction slightly. I'm realizing trying to describe that I'm not totally sure how those things are different. So I might need to go back and read that. But that would be my sort of best attempt summary of what those things are.
Yeah, thanks for summarizing. It's very interesting to me to I'm thinking of these syntheses also in terms of like their metaphors for or they're referring to like I don't know, linguistic processes that like they come up in like psychoanalysis of like young children forming words or something, and how that might map to the process of like the schizoanalysis that they're trying to pitch. I don't know if that's like actually a thing, but that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I think I have the wrong connotation of the word synthesis in my head that I'm trying to overwrite, because I think the thing that synthesis brings to my head is this sort of like vulgar understanding of like dialectics, of like you have a thesis and an antithesis, and then in some way those things like smash against each other and like improve an idea. And I think in the context of what Deleuze and Guattari are probably talking about, they're talking about synthesis in terms of like synthesizing something, in terms of like a factory, in terms of just like producing something. It's not necessarily this bi-univocal thing happening. I wonder if Buchanan wishes he was writing about Althusser instead of Deleuze and Guattari, because he talks about Althusser and quotes from Althusser quite extensively.
It's funny. Yeah, so the best, like, I don't know, the impression that I got from reading what I've read so far of this reader's guide and the actual text is that, like, so much of this is, like, I don't know, to call it reactionary seems to minimize it, but it seems to, like, be a reaction against, like, Freudian and Freudian psychoanalysis and Lacan's reaction to that, and like and using that as like a way of like making broader statements about capital and mental health and like all these things. But I'm still quite mired in a lot of what is going on here, so Hard for me to come up with any like incisive or insightful points or questions to have. So
yeah, I think that I was oscillating for a little bit there. I was like threatening to like abandon this like productive model of the unconscious and like become a Lacanian. And I think that there's still a chance that I could do that, and I need to read a lot more Lacan before I sort of figure out where I fall on that. But I think reading this reader's guide and reading this, The Whole and Its Parts, especially, I can sort of see, like, why it's very dangerous to install like lack or castration as this sort of basic model for the unconscious. I do still feel that like there's a there's still like something representational happening there. There's still like an idea of a self or a self relating a self relation that's much too fixed and limited. And that's the issue. It's not necessarily about like, is it positive or negative? Is it like about lack or is it about production? Like, I don't really care about that as much as like it's too it's too dynamic. The unconscious is too dynamic to be sort of placed fully within this model of a subject who lacks the sort of object which will allow it to to appropriately execute its power, you know, like thinking of what was the example that Zizek gave in How to Read the Con? It was King Lear, I think, where it's like this scene where King Lear is like, I can't make you a king. I can't like dispossess myself of the garments, the crown and the scepter that make me a king because I never had them to begin with. Like they're this name, this position, it doesn't stick because there's no being there that's actually able to like, yeah. So see, I don't have a good way. I'm not quite able to articulate this, so I'm not quite ready to like say Lacan is wrong, or not that he's wrong, but that like it's little like arborisms within this like rhizomatic structure of the unconscious. But I think I'm a little bit more toward the Deleuzian side of things at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, without having near the context that you probably have, I would say that there seems to be something more generative about approaching this stuff from the angle of like desire that I think Deleuze is talking about versus like Lacan seems to be more about the lack and like this doesn't seem as interesting to me, but I don't know.
Plastic Pills videos on Lacan are really good and where I get most of my understanding of Lacan. But I still don't feel like I understand him at all.
Yeah, so I've listened to a fair bit of like podcasts and whatnot. I think I need to start taking notes and like actually, you know, referring to those notes when I do. But I did watch the from Plastic Pills. They talked about they have a video on schizoanalysis and Oedipus, and that was pretty interesting to like just get a little bit of context on this text and like just the concept of territories and zones and whatnot is context I didn't have before, so I'll definitely be looking at them more, fill in the gaps in my understanding. So anybody have other thoughts on this? Sorry to hear that, Nia. Yeah. So one thing I like about this book is the all the references to other media. It gave me a good excuse to read. I only read the first of Beckett's trilogy of the Molloy, and it comes up in Antiochus as a as like a example, I think, of like the schizophrenic like thought process is like illustration of that. And it's a pretty interesting book. I found it pretty hard to read because you're reading the thoughts of a somebody's descent into madness, but it is illuminating in the context of like, I don't know, the sort of thought process, the form and not the content necessarily. I am interested to read D.H. Lawrence and like understand why he is referenced by this book. Like, don't have any ideas on that yet, but
What are you going to pick up from Lawrence?
I have the book that they talk about is Aaron's Rod is the book that I found, which I think is mentioned. I think they mentioned it in the context of like a reaction against like psychoanalysis, like Freudian analysis, but I don't quite no, I don't think it's the same vibe as Beckett, so it's would be an interesting contrast. And yeah, thinking more about Lacan from this text as well. So
I don't remember if it was in this reading group or I think it was on PillPod. They were talking about this D.H. Lawrence story where he talks about he imagines a psychoanalyst looking at a baby, sort of like sitting there, like screaming and wailing and crying in a crib and trying to understand, like, okay, well, what's going on with this baby, and just like sitting outside under a tree and like trying to like produce some kind of like interesting thought about like the family complex of this baby screaming and crying, and all they can do, they just start rambling about trees and talking about different types of trees, and it's just like this sort of like mad or like daydreamy sort of ramble about plants. And I guess his point is that just like at a certain level that you try to get down into desire and try to like impose some sort of like theater on it, the more it becomes just like this impossible that you're missing the trees for the forest, perhaps. That there's a concreteness and an imminence there that like doesn't that's just about like the partial machines, the tit and the baby's mouth. It's there isn't a like the baby isn't walking around with like a little model of mom and dad in there that they're like mapping everything onto. No, it's immediate. I can't remember what the name of that story was.
Yeah, my impression just like of how this is situated historically in like the, I don't know, discourse of psychoanalysis is that there's this huge momentous work from Freud to explain, to like rationalize all of these like impulses and to give a model of the unconscious that seems like interesting and people adopt it, and then it leads to some like super weird conclusions about like how people are and like how children are and like and if you just keep with Freud, it's like you just have to swallow the weirdness, and then like Lacan and then Deleuze are like, well, I don't know, if you break with Freud in like certain ways, you can get some like a little bit more intuitive understandings of how people are. So that's kind of how I view this, is like continuing that quest of rationalizing behavior in a way, like to come up with models to explain why people do the things they do without having it all be because of their parents or because of some like libidinal drive or whatever.
I'm curious because like if I think about the kind of mental health resources that most people have access to, it's not gonna be psychoanalysis, right? Like most people are not getting an analyst to talk with them about their mother and father and the little Oedipal drama that created the person that they are. It's mostly like antidepressants and like CBT. Like it's almost like they're like it, like this is attacking an enemy that is already long dead. This idea that you're going to have like a therapy that's going to get into your history and like uncover the family secret that makes you you, and you'll find some original resolution to the Oedipal problem. Like it's almost it's very impersonal or sort of like machinic, the healthcare that I think most people are able to access.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there are some like people who are actually trained in like psychotherapy or like in the Discord. So I'm curious to hear what they or to hear those better informed thoughts. My impression is that probably a lot of like trained therapists that are doing like talk therapy probably have their basis in like the Freudian view of things, which maybe just informs like what that talk therapy, what this CBT could look like, but then also the I don't know, I feel like the reason for reacting against Freud isn't necessarily because it'll have an impact on the sort of like psychoanalysis that people might receive.
Right.
Instead, I mean, I was joking about this last week because it seems like if you wanted to be really, really reductive, you could just view anti-Oedipus as like this really long like rant about like how like actually like I don't care about my parents, like I don't have an Oedipus complex, like I don't, like those don't apply to me. And like if you were to say that to Freud, Freud would like come up with some, box reason that, oh yeah, well actually that's all just like, compensating for your repressed Oedipal complex or whatever. And so I feel like it's more, and I don't have that view. Actually, I just think it's like a funny reaction to have. To Deleuze and Guattari, but I think it's what was I gonna say? The it's like the Freud has the worldview. It's like the basis of so much of our understanding that even if people don't operationalize that understanding in therapy, it seems like that's the project is to supplant that with something
Yeah.
better or more descriptive. Like I don't know if anybody's read the philosophy of Richard Rorty, but talks about the idea of philosophy and other societal, cultural artifacts as describing and redescribing the world, and like how it just gives us like the bases to like communicate and empathize with each other. And like he cites Freud's theory of the unconscious as like a radical redescription of the world, where prior to Freud there was no like common understanding of like the unconscious as like a thing that could drive people. And even if you don't have any idea like what Freud said specifically, like in today's society we just like totally accept the idea that we have unconscious desires that will motivate us. And so that's like, I don't know, a testament to how influential that work is. And I think it's like the project of any philosopher that comes after Freud to like make the more persuasive case so that maybe they come up with the next like accepted thing that people use in their day-to-day. That's how I look at it, at least.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you're right. Like Freud has this sort of like a lot of things that we take for granted that Freud pioneered, like the idea of repression is sort of a ubiquitous concept, and more than that, this idea of like this sort of like hermeneutics of suspicion, this idea that like there's some secret at the bottom of human the human story, that like if we uncovered, like there's like if we look underneath, we'll find an animal under what we think is like a civilized being. And that's been the sort of and the idea that like everything ultimately is some sort of like phallic signifier, everything is secretly about sex. And that is, if you're going to have a theory of desire, then you better address that in the modern world. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess also this book is like, comes after what is like the May 68 events, and is like trying to explain in some way like both, what could adequately explain what went on in France then, and then like more generally, like they talk about like the desire to have the inability to explain why people are drawn to fascism, to drawn to their own like subjugation. So it's interesting. Like I wonder if like a true Freudian, like somebody really steeped in that tradition, would read these like problems that Deleuze or Guattari have with the inability to explain these phenomena and like have some answer. Like I wonder what the counter argument to Deleuze is in these matters, or Guattari for that matter.
Yeah,
because like there's still Freudians, I think, right? Like people still
we're all Freudians. Freud is the sort of majoritarian culture, and anybody like even the Freudians are all sort of like adding their little caveats and complexities to what is at base a Freudian conception of the world.
I like how If you call yourself a Deleuzian, it sounds similar to delusion. I like
I'm delusional.
that. Well, it's been an hour of me talking out of my ass. Does anybody have anything better to say? Or do we want
I have,
to next read?
yeah, I have said all of the sort of vague, I've gestured at all the vague concepts I possibly can, so maybe it's time to talk about what we should read next week. Do we want to go back to the text, or do we want to continue reading the reader's guide? I think we should start back with the book proper. So this first section of Psychoanalysis and Familialism, The Holy Family, goes from page 50. Oh, it's real short. This first section is like 4 pages. So maybe a little bit more than that.
We read the first two sections. We could.
Yeah,
I'm.
it's like 16-ish pages.
Yeah, and then I'm just looking at the next. Well, that's a little bit much, I guess. Yeah. Read to the first synthesis section.
Yep, that makes sense for me.
By the way, do any of you look at these in the contents section? So there's like the chapter and there's like the section. So the machine's a whole in its parts, but then there's all these points like under the whole in its parts of the status of multiplicities, the partial objects, the critique of Oedipus, the Oedipal mystification, so on and so on. I've found it to be pretty interesting to look at these and try to figure out like, oh yeah, that's what that section talks about. Like I don't know. It's not.
I certainly
Oh, go on.
have noted how in both this book and A Thousand Plateaus, their like table of contents are quite sort of I don't know, how do I put this? Like this bricolage of things that they talk about, I never got to the level of like looking at those phrases and then trying to identify like where in the chapter they actually talk about them.
I feel like it's almost it could form a good check on like ha after reading the section, like looking at those points and asking oh, the three texts of Freud, what's the flattening out of Judge Schreber's delirium? Like, do I remember what that could refer to? Yeah, I don't know. It's,
Do you think they wrote these before or after they wrote the main text?
I have no idea. I interpreted these as like sort of summaries, like to go point or almost paragraph by paragraph of like what the section is setting out to say. But yeah, this is before. Huh.
I think they probably wrote them after. That would make sense.
Yeah, in terms of like just I'm thinking about how to structure discussions about this book and Yeah, it just might be one way of providing a structure might be to use those points as a reference to,
Yeah,
different.
that's a good
So.
idea. All right, cool. Yeah, that's all I have.
Great. Well, excited to come back next week with some new confounding questions to ask.
Yeah.